And we are live here on Facebook on Augusta Free Press. I am Chris Grant talking with Josh Deal, and we're talking pro wrestling.
Yes, sir.
Here on a Tuesday afternoon. And we can talk about the last couple of weeks of developments in WWE as the company heads towards its Money in the Bank pay-per-view, such as that will be. Yep. AEW, and maybe just in general, kind of looking at the state of the industry, but maybe first, Josh, let's talk about the walk-up to Money in the Bank, the go-home show last night, Monday Night Raw's go-home version anyway. We have SmackDown still to go later this week. I don't know. I mean, I guess we've been trying to put a positive spin on where WWE is going. They're trying, at least, in this era of COVID-19 and shutdowns and such. But has what you've seen the last couple of weeks got you excited for Sunday night?
No.
Bluntly.
It hasn't. It feels – look, I get things that are different right now, and I get things are difficult, but it's just – it's bad. The promos are just droning, and they put these people out there for 5 to 10 minutes to talk about a match buildup. And like, why are they just not doing pro wrestling? Why are they not just putting action out there to move it along, playing with all these different ideas? The gauntlet match wasn't a bad idea, but gauntlet matches in general are just, you know, the last two or three guys are the only people that have a chance. Like, why do you, it's one of my least favorite gimmick matches in the history of pro wrestling, because it's, you're setting up, if it's used well, if you want to have, you know, a Vince McMahon type promoter screw over, you know, his adversary type character. But if you're just going to put it together, like, hey, this is how we're going to decide who goes on, I don't know. But AJ Styles returned. It's always great to have him back in the mix. But his promo didn't make any sense whatsoever. I was just talking about, like, I was buried alive and I survived it. I'm like, man, I kind of wish they would have just skipped over that. It's like, it was a movie. It wasn't – anyway. But it's been pretty lackluster. I was looking forward to – and I still am – the match between – Drew McIntyre and Seth Rollins, but it's just so slow and it's just so prodding along when you're actually watching the show. It's the Monday Night Raw last night really, really dragged. It was really, really slow. And it seems like they're getting into a habit of just having these really long promos and talking sessions, thinking that's a good way to fill airspace. I highly disagree. I think that pro wrestling, if you're trying to fill airspace, fill it with matches, not people talking. So that's my two cents on it. What about you, man? How do you see this going? What have you gotten out of all this?
I mean, I feel like there have been glimpses, and I'll even mention AEW in this context. I think AEW has put on a lot of good actual matches.
Oh yeah.
And we've discussed this by text, and I thought, like, last week the Apollo Crews Andrade match on Raw was really good.
It's fantastic.
And what I'm noticing with both that match I'll highlight from WWE and there have been several in AEW in the last few weeks, you know, it's different. I mean, when you wrestle in front of a crowd, there are things you do as a performer in front of a crowd, the two wrestlers or a tag team match, whatever it may be. There are things you do. There are things you do to get the crowd, either if you're the face, you get the crowd cheering. If you're a heel, you get the crowd, you know, wanting your blood. And there are things you do to play the crowd that maybe, you know, it works obviously in front of a crowd, but when there's no crowd, if you still wrestle that way, it comes off as completely odd because
it's so cheesy. Like, why are you playing? Why are you going up to the top rope and doing your pose down thing and the point and like yelling at people? You're not yelling at anybody. Are you yelling at the cameraman? There's not even concessions guy who you yell at. It's so annoying.
Like, what about the Andrade and Apollo Crews match did so well, you know, 2 weeks ago? It was almost like they completely acknowledged and planned for that match. Let's not even act like there's a crowd, because there's not a crowd. So let's act like there's not a crowd. And they just wrestled, and it was a great match. And it went on for probably 20 minutes, and it was back and forth, chain wrestling, catch wrestling. And
high spots. They did fast portions of it. They did the big impact moves where you thought, in this modern age, you know, a referee might call a match kind of a thing. And they didn't, but Apollo Crews is just, he's one of those uber athletes that WWE lucked into. I really do believe. And then Andrade, he is a luchador and that's his speed. And that if you want to get the most out of him, let him wrestle like a luchador. And that's the closest I think I've seen him doing that since, you know, he took the, well, his, he had a couple good matches with Aleister Black, of course, but other than that, Andrade's just kind of been, you know, they're trying to like build him up as the rich, you know, Mexican whatever character that they screwed up with Alberto Del Rio. But that match in particular was phenomenal. It is a rare kind of an outlier for the past few weeks of WWE TV, especially with their matches. I thought we would get a little bit more out of AJ Styles, but his match kind of back was, you know, it was okay. It was fun. His promo was bad as usual. That's just AJ Styles. But yeah, it's good to have him back on TV. Hopefully they'll get him back into something sooner rather than later. And they probably will point him into the title scene. My guess is that he will be heading after the Universal title after Money in the Bank. I don't know why you bring AJ Styles back right now unless he goes over at Money in the Bank. That's just my opinion on that.
So I was going to interject with another thought and then we can get back to where we are here, but we have to comment on this, both of us.
Sure.
I don't know what my comment is even going to be. WWE completely editing references to Roman Reigns out of any mention right now. Last night, video yeah. highlights of Seth Rollins at WrestleMania 31.
Yeah.
One of my favorite WrestleMania memories, to be honest.
That was a huge moment.
He turned the title match between Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns into a triple threat with the Money in the Bank cash in. Mm-hmm. I popped like crazy that night. I still do when I see the highlights beautiful. Of that.
Yeah.
It's amazing the timing of that and everything else. And so yeah, let's edit him out. Let's edit Roman Reigns, the guy who got pissed out of that. What is going on with editing Roman Reigns? They're not mentioning his name on TV. They're editing him out of a key sequence in WWE history.
Yep.
Is he being punished for stepping out of the WrestleMania main event?
I don't think so. I don't think it's about him. I don't think it's about punishing him. I think that the WWE has shown that they are on his side with the leukemia stuff and letting him take time off. And, you know, he's kind of – it's also kind of been talked about in other – things I've read that he's worked a little bit of a reduced schedule more so than a lot of full-time guys have because of those issues and trying to, you know, treat them. And they were kind of under wraps, but I think this is my interpretation of what they're doing. They're going to try and put fans back into the stands, into the arenas, and probably just the performance center sooner rather than later. I think we're going to see that this month. We're going to see live TV, WWE TV with fans. They don't want to – I think they're trying to cut out references to possible health risks for that. And, of course, if you have a medical condition such as Roman Reigns, who is, you know, a cancer survivor, leukemia, that's a pretty serious risk. And they may be thinking about the long haul, not having Roman Reigns for a while. It could be a couple years, honestly. Depends on how this whole COVID-19 thing goes. So I think it's more about – I think it's a PR move. I don't think it's necessarily anything against Roman Reigns. That's my take on it. He's such a cash cow for the company. Maybe they don't want to hurt his brand by dragging him into this and making people talk about, well, why aren't you coming back? Why aren't you involved? Why aren't you at least doing promos or whatever? But, no, I think it's trying to, you know, tone down the health concern conversations as they start introducing fans back into the performance center, which I think the performance center will be the base of operations for quite some time.
I can buy that. I mean, I might do something different to keep his either name completely in front of people by doing some promos, having him do something in a commentary role, even if it's an offsite commentary role, sure. Or don't make it so that highlights are available that you then have to cut him out of, you know, don't yeah. highlight the fact that you're not highlighting him. But I kind of go with what you're saying there. You know, from the promo standpoint, Josh, you mentioned a little earlier, how the promos are flat to say the least, but they're also taking up a lot of time on shows.
So much
at
time.
Least in the WWE shows.
Yeah.
But we've traded some texts on this, and I was also mm-hmm. texting another friend who's a really a big wrestling fan like we are and observer. Sure. What I'm trying to relate is it feels like to me a way to go about the promos to not make them seem so artificial. Promos, just like ring entrances, when you do a ring entrance and you do all the flash and everything else and there's not anybody there to play off of, it feels artificial.
Yeah.
And when you do the WWE style promo is intended to get crowd reaction and then play mm-hmm. off crowd reaction.
Yeah, with gimmicks and with catchphrases yeah. and just trying to say stuff that's going to be, you know, it's going to elicit a response, like a very Jericho, like try to be controversial and get people to, you know, react in a certain way. So I get what you're saying. Continue on. That's just my.
Oh, it's yeah. And that's what it is. And it seems to me that a better way to do this, it, you know, assuming that we both assume that, you know, as things are moving slowly towards normal again, when we get back there, it's going to be a few weeks, a couple months, whatever.
A while. Yeah.
That, in the meantime, why not play it differently? Studio wrestling. We're both fans of studio wrestling. We talked on a show previously about the revival of NWA done by Billy Corgan and what he's trying to do there. We grew up watching, or at least I grew up, I may be a little older than you, but grew up watching the studio wrestling of the 80s. There was a whole approach there. You didn't, if you were Ric Flair or Dusty Rhodes, you didn't need more than 10 people sitting there in the TBS studios in Georgia. You didn't need those people to do anything. You just had you had Tony Schiavone holding the microphone. You had a camera there, and you sold the NWA to a nationwide audience in a way that's not done now. But why not play that instead of these long-winded discussion points that are playing off of crowds that aren't there? It seems to me there's a way to do what you need to do to get characters over, to get feuds over, without having to play the WWE style right now.
Sure. So WWE promos are, they're canned, of course. They're scripted. There's a style. They're used to having guys like a Shawn Michaels who's sitting over your shoulder there looking all good and stuff, or like a Triple H that can talk and just like build their own thing. And your top guys, you want to be able to do that. And they want everybody to kind of fit that mold. Just everybody just can't. Professional wrestlers, in large part, they can do it in the ring. But they, you're not going to have – it's very rare where you can get both. Somebody that can talk, orate, tell a story verbally, and get over. I mean, not everybody's the Rock. So you gotta try to protect people a little bit. And I think a style that really, really works in the modern era, especially with WWE – and I don't know why they aren't doing this anymore New Japan style of, you know, interviews, post-match interviews, even promos and stuff like that. What they do – if you don't know, if you've never seen New Japan Pro Wrestling, this is what they do. There's a backdrop. It looks very much like, you know, after an NBA game or whatever, there's a banner behind them, and there's logos and sponsorships and whatever, and there's rows of microphones. Whether or not in New Japan Pro Wrestling any of those microphones are actually real businesses, I can't tell you.
Doubt they are, right?
but it looks good.
It looks good.
So I think WWE could do that. WWE could realistically, they could set up that, they could have a dude sit down, or maybe have like one interview person, like a leader, or like a, you know, kind of someone that's organizing the chaos of questions, or like a, you know, a press news briefing that you would see, and just have people like reacting to random questions. I think that's that speed of promo would work really well with these guys. And it would help protect a lot of these guys that just can't talk.
NXT uses that motif on its, for a lot of its interviews. You'll see either outside of the entrance to the Performance Center or I guess Full Sail Studios, or sometimes even backstage, you'll see them, maybe not with the sophistication of what you're talking about with New Japan, with that backdrop. But yeah, they actually have used that. Well, they'll have
a few people with
their camera phones up and, you know, doing the interview, because it's authentic to me, because I'm a sports writer, you know, outside of what I do as we talk about wrestling. And I'm in those gaggles often after basketball and football games, especially college level games. And so I know it's authentic, because that's what we do when we're doing those games. So, yeah, that's one way of doing it. But, you know, I'll say this, Josh. It's been a few years since I've worked in the business. I need to send you some links. I need to maybe put these up on a future Facebook post. The other night, nothing on TV, after having watched yet another conclusion of a series, I went to YouTube. And I don't know what made me lead to this, but I went to some of the stuff we did for Awesome Wrestling Entertainment back in the day.
Awesome.
Watch some of my old videos on YouTube, and they're like 8 or 9 years old.
Yeah, man.
What's interesting is, you know, it's not been that long since you could just hold up a microphone, put a camera on a guy, and they could talk. You know, and I'm not, of course, we did a lot of stuff with top guys like
Kevin Morton
and Shawn Michaels, but the young guys even then, you know, and we you can't afford to pay everybody $5,000 to work your shows. You have to have your fair number of $100 and $200 guys. And every one of those guys, they might not have all been Kevin Nash, Shawn Michaels level, but they knew to get there, they had to be able to talk and work. And so, you know, you would put the camera on them, give them a microphone, and they could sell, you know,
to 30
degrees they could. And I think maybe what we're seeing in WWE is it's gotten so corporate where everything's taught, everything's scripted, everything's laid out so much that maybe these guys are just scared to even talk for themselves. They're terrified. An opportunity. You know, they give them an opportunity, give them a microphone, and let them be, let them create. The one, it's sink or swim. It's grab the brass ring, everything else. But let's see who can get there and talk their way to the top.
Grab the brass ring. Oh man, I want to make some Vern Gagne comments, but we're trying to keep this a PG-13. But I just don't think there's many of them that are capable right now. I mean, you see, like if you look at Becky Lynch, who she's a great performer. Right. There's not a whole lot about her that would have drawn the normal WWE fan in. Right. She's a pretty good worker. She's a pretty good wrestler, but she could talk. She can get on the mic. She can tell the story. She could even work past her accent in the WWE. That's a huge thing. If you have a foreign accent, if you're not American, you have an accent. It's hard to get over. It's hard to get Vince McMahon behind your abilities, but she's great. Bray Wyatt. I mean, he is 100% a storyteller. His matches are secondary. He's the second coming of Raven. Like it doesn't matter what a Bray Wyatt match looks like or is. He just talks you there and he gets you drawn in emotionally and mentally. And whatever happens in the ring, that's secondary. Stone Cold and The Rock. Stone Cold started out as a fantastic in-ring worker. But, you know, after the injury, Stone Cold nor The Rock were great. Neither one of them were all that great in the ring. But they got you there. They drew you in. They had that magnetism. They could talk you into caring about a match. I think we've gone into an era of wrestling post ECW, WCW, the death of the cruiserweights and all that stuff. We had the X Division. And then the X Division came about. ROH came about. And it all became – there was a generation of wrestlers, maybe we're two generations in now, where it's all athleticism, and that's it, and that's what sells on the independent scene. Maybe that's something that's working against people, like what sells on the independent scene these days. Maybe that's part of the problem that we're experiencing right now as far as being able to tell a story all the way through. Even Rollins is seen as, like Seth Rollins, he's seen as a great, mic guy. But he's pretty good. I mean, he's not bad, but he's not like – I've never been just like wowed by Seth Rollins. But he has a reputation of being really good on the mic and that kind of a thing. So, yeah, but you're seeing up and down the card. But if you're not looking at the top of the card in WWE, even the Universal Champion right now, Braun Strowman, we've talked about it before. Poor guy. He's terrible on the mic. He might be the worst of the worst. But – he's champion because he has something to sell. He has a gimmick. He has a look and all that stuff. But it is, but when it's up to, like the David Lee Roth scenario is like, if you can't do it with a microphone and a light bulb, then you can't do it, And I think that's what we're kind of seeing right now, how limited and who separates who from being, true professional wrestlers versus WWE products, that kind of a thing.
I would throw out anybody watching this right now. And of course, we would love comments. I've actually seen a couple of comments, just people saying hi as we're talking here right now. But if you have any questions, any things you want us to address topic wise, feel free to post that as a comment on this on the live version, and we'll be glad to try to address. Sure. I found a few months ago, and I've been watching this like piece by piece for the last few months off and on. Ric Flair's 60 best promos. And I say 60 best, it's not an official ranking or anything else, but somebody put together 60 Ric Flair promos from the 1980s, from the old World Championship Wrestling pre-WCW days.
When it was just a TV show, not a promotion.
6:05 on Saturday nights. And they
Jim pulled Crockett together.
And basically, Ric Flair, they would just say, Rick, go out and sell. And they time limits, no whatever. If it takes just 2 minutes, if it takes you 8 minutes, you got what you need. Tony Schiavone or David Crockett holding the microphone, and Ric Flair talking trash on Ron Garvin or Barry Windham or Nikita Koloff or whoever it was. And
exactly.
And there was no wrestling involved. It's a 4-hour-long video. I watch it in 45 to hour-long minute spurts. And it is more entertaining than anything you see on TV right now.
Yeah.
Non-wrestling related, certainly wrestling related. It's just Ric Flair. And some of the stuff I'm watching, I was a preteen and an early teen when I was watching this. And some of the stuff makes me blanch now. It's so racy, but it wasn't obviously racy, I guess, then.
Well,
but
racy and racist, too. Like, you look at some of the old, like, some of the stuff he would come out with, and just, like, the stuff that would, not saying Ric Flair's a racist, but, like, the stuff that they could say back then, there was almost, today, there would be, you know, protests outside.
Everything about Space Mountain, everything about young lady, you can't be first, but you might be next. I mean, all this, everything. I'm watching this saying, how did my parents let me watch this stuff? Oh, my God. But it is great. It's riveting. And, again, there's no wrestling involved.
Nope.
And it's more entertaining than anything you'll see in pro wrestling today. And that's what got you. I mean, it was a studio show with squash matches for 2 hours, but you had Ric Flair. Every show you had Ric Flair, you had Dusty Rhodes. And they would come out and do their 5 minutes. And if nothing else, you saw – and then Jim Cornette would come out and sell them during the Midnight Express squash match. He would talk for the 5 minutes during their match. And if nothing else, you had those 15 minutes where you were entertained beyond anything you're entertained by in WWE today. And you know, it makes me think, I mean, we need talkers. We need, whether it's the performers themselves, you know, we're missing guys like the Cornettes too. You know, we're missing the Barkers. We have Paul Heyman, and that's what we got.
Right.
But we need more Paul Heymans. We need more Jim Cornettes. We need more guys like that, or gals like that, as the case may be. You know, there is Zelina Vega, but she's an enhancement talent in the sense that she goes in and interferes on behalf of Andrade. And you have Penelope Ford in AEW working with Kip Sabian, does the same kind of thing. She's not a talker. She's a looker, and she can perform. But we need more people talking, because wrestling is, you know, I remember Roddy Piper saying this back in the 80s. The only thing, the main difference between amateur wrestling and pro wrestling is we get to use steel chairs. You know, you need something that makes you different. And right now, the only thing that's different is if it's all entertainment, if it's all talent, if it's all the high spots and everything else, it's just another athletic competition. You need the Muhammad Ali aspect, the Gorgeous George aspect to this. And we're really missing that in wrestling today.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, that would be fantastic if they had it. I just don't know who on the roster right now could fill that role. I mean, there's only so much Bray Wyatt you can put on TV right now, you know, and there's only so much, you know, like, maybe bring back the Vince McMahon character some, maybe bring back the Triple H character sometime, somehow, just some sort of like spark to the program. But I think
Kevin Owens could, if they wanted to work with, he's a great mic guy.
He's a phenomenal mic guy. Daniel Bryan, phenomenal mic guy. He's a guy you he could go for hours. I'm trying to think right off the top of my head. You know, Balor's getting better. Tommaso Ciampa, he is a guy. I think that you need to maybe do some of that in and out, back and forth between NXT
Ciampa had heat after he turned on Gargano when they were DIY. He had such heat that for months he didn't have a song. He didn't have an entrance song. He would just stand there on the ramp. And when they did NXT takeovers, 15,000 people were booing him like they wanted him dead. They wanted him to vanish off the ramp because he turned on Gargano.
Yeah, and NXT people are supposed to be smart marks, you know?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's supposed to be smart marks. We're supposed to know the business. And people hated him with a passion. He didn't need music. In fact, when they finally gave him a song, I was like, I was disappointed. He doesn't need a song. He's that over. And so, yeah, Ciampa, I mean, before that injury, before his neck injury, I was so pleased to see they were doing the tag team. They were sort of reviving DIY, and you knew why they were doing it. They were setting them back up to be a team so they could turn on each other again on the main roster. And unfortunately, that neck injury set that back a year or more. But Ciampa needs to be at the top level. He definitely does.
I think so. You could put him up there. You could put him in the mix for the U.S. title or something like that. Or you could help the NXT, whatever, the Cruiserweight Championship. Anyways, I think we've talked about this topic a little bit over text, you know, melding the brands for a while. And this kind of flows into some of the cuts that we've talked about that have, you know, been pretty much the top of the business right now. If you don't need the talent, just pull your best guys and your best women and put them in the ring together, put them on, you know, opposite sides of the ring together for now, until there's fans and until there's something to draw. Man, I was trying to think about other guys right now in WWE that really get me going besides Kevin Owens and Daniel Bryan on the mic. Oh, Velveteen. Okay.
Oh, yeah,
so
yeah.
I know that they've got plans for him in NXT right now. But man, like they've got, you know, the NXT Women's Championship is basically a main roster championship right now. I think he would be a guy. If you want to put people and get people interested about something that's happening on Monday Night Raw or, you know, Friday Night SmackDown, he's a guy that could just get on the mic and make you laugh, make you pay attention. And I think that's part of why Otis is doing so well. Like that thing, his gimmick with Mandy Rose, it's like, it's cheesy, but it's funny and it's entertaining. I think right now WWE, they need more comedy. For one, I think that would be great for their product, and they need more action because I think the large point I'm trying to make is that there's just not enough storytellers to go around in WWE right now. But there are amazing athletes, and that's how you get to that stage is you are an amazing athlete, and maybe take it to that direction and make it and simplify the interview process for these guys and girls that just aren't there yet. But at the same, yeah. But it would be so much better than having Braun Strowman go out there and be interviewed by Nikki Cross and Alexa Bliss.
Yeah, they could have more Andrade Apollo Crews matches. Give the talents more time to actually work. Mm-hmm. Instead of just filling time with mic time, you know, AEW has stumbled upon something good, and I'm wondering when we lift out of this and move towards having more regular shows again, whenever that is in a few months, if they have to re-examine what they're doing, because they have stumbled into Chris Jericho being perhaps this generation's Jesse Ventura. The shows it's with so him good. And Shivani, they have. I love Jim Ross. I love Jim Ross from a few years ago more than I love him now. Now it's more Jim Ross. It's more that he is Jim Ross than that he's a good Jim Ross, but he's still Jim Ross. But yeah. the Chris Jericho, Tony Schiavone team. Is gold.
It's beautiful.
And I don't want to mess a good thing up when they come back and you can come back and you can do what you want to do. If I'm Tony Khan, I'm saying I need Jericho as my heel announcer.
I think they're going to do that. I think they're going to play with that angle a little bit more and maybe even play with some of the other heels coming in and doing some guest announcing and stuff like that. I mean, for Jim Ross, and he's getting older, you can listen to it sometimes, and he sounds a little tired when he's on there sometimes. Like, look, man, I understand. He's been through a lot. And his wife died a couple years ago, and he's had a lot of health problems. And he's got to be pushing 70. So it makes sense that he's going to slow down a little bit, you know. But yeah, Jericho in that role and as a guy almost reminds me of back when Roddy Piper was he would do the announcing thing, but then for the big show, for the main like events and stuff like that, they would roll him back out there and he would, you know, WWE, even WCW, NWA, he would wrestle, he would do announcing and then they would put him on, you know, for a big feud or something like that. I think Jericho's at that stage in his career too, where he could do both very, very believably. But yeah, so a JR Shivani Jericho, you know, that's kind of, if that's AEW's stalwart, you know, announce team, that's absolutely beautiful. Absolutely. Because I think you want to keep JR around. And maybe he might be happier just to call the main event. You know, it's main event time. Here comes JR. But he's, you know, he's also maybe he's backstage. He's working AEW's version of Gorilla or, you know, or whatever. I don't know if they call it. They might call it Nutsack or something. But like, just I'm not sure because the Brody Lee characters, I'm really enjoying that too, how they're building that, and it's just these like really deep cuts onto who Vince McMahon is and how he interacts with certain people. Love those promos. And Brody Lee is like, he's one of the most talented, physically gifted big men I've ever seen in the business, but I'm also very impressed at how good he is at just telling a story and not raising his voice at all. But you know he means business. It's that's one of my favorite things about AEW right now. I think this is the first time the past month is the first time I would say that I think AEW is a better product on TV than WWE. I think they hit some bumps, along the way. Me and you, we've talked about that in private. Maybe I've mentioned it here too, but yeah, I think they're starting to find their stride as far as storytelling and who is who on their roster. And the TNT Championship, even though the name is terrible, I think it's been really good for, I think it's been really good TV. It's been really good TV.
It's a TNT Championship. It's going to be decided on a pay-per-view, though, unfortunately, for those who want to see a TNT champion crowned.
I've lamented about that one as well. So.
We have talked about that. And a couple of my other friends have also noted the irony of that, I guess you can say. But, yeah, I agree. I think they've managed their way from just a pure show standpoint. Their shows are more watchable, if only in part because they figured out how to space people out around the ring and make noise during the matches, you know, occasionally interfere. I'm trying to think. Somebody last week threw a punch.
Britt Baker. Yeah. She's so good. She took her shoe off and hit Dustin.
Cody, right?
Was it Cody or what?
It was either Cody or Dustin. I can't remember.
Yeah, it was in that match. It was along the way in that match. And she sits over there and she's like, whatever. And it's so funny.
Yeah, we got the crowd involved. And so they're making noise. They're sometimes interfering. Every once in a while, Jericho gets bored and calls that one guy Pineapple Pete, but you know, it's fine. It's all good. You know, you'll get the occasional stare down. I think it was the whole thing with Brody Lee and Marco Stunt started because Marco Stunt was one of those stationed around ringside and he stared at Brody Lee looking up 4 feet at him and that led to a match. And, you know, so
Marco Stunt. That guy's got to be what, like 5'5 or something like that. I mean, I know.
5'3, and I would believe 5'3 or 5'0. If you told me he was 4'2, I'd believe it too, based on how small he looks compared to everybody else.
Well, Brody Lee's like 6'7, 6'8. He's a big, big man. He's a huge man. The beer gut kind of makes him look a little shorter, but like he's massive. If you look him in the ring, like next to Luke Harper, he's just as tall as that guy. He's not much shorter than Kane, you know, in those matches the Bludgeon Brothers, was it? Yeah. They worked a couple matches against, Taker and Kane. I think it was in Mexico or something like that. So I saw them in the ring and not a whole lot of difference in height between all four of those guys, but of course Taker's just slightly taller.
Yeah. And you know, for him, you know, he doesn't have to wear the dirty clothes anymore. He can actually, you know, wash his ring gear after every match.
I was kind of disappointed that he didn't cut the beard and didn't kind of like, you know, completely wash away the WWE thing. Maybe he's got something going on in his face he's not comfortable with, but, I was really hoping to see like him look like almost like this. Who's the guy in TNA, the evil, he was with Abyss forever. He's like the Satan, anyway, whatever. He's like really trimmed, like goatee and like the satanic looking hair from like the 70s.
The manager, you mean? I can't think of his name right now. You know, I think he's playing off with the name Brody Lee. I mean, I assume he's playing off the resemblance to Bruiser Brody, which of course for fans anything under than 40 years old, you wouldn't even know what the name Bruiser Brody
is. Or maybe even Brian Lee too, like from ECW fame. You remember that name?
But the look is Bruiser Brody.
Sure.
The dark hair kind of pulled back. He's got the beard.
He's untucked that hair.
As crazy as Bruiser Brody. You know, Bruiser Brody was much more – he had a much more believable, crazy character. But they're trying to go in that direction with him. And, of course, the size similarity, the way he works even is very similar.
He's so fast. He's so on.
Very mobile, agile, big man. And, you know, hey, Lance Archer in a similar vein. I think as we were texting the last couple of weeks, you've come around a little bit, at least, on Lance Archer. A really good match with Dustin Rhodes last week in the semifinals of that TNT tournament.
I think he showed well. It was – and this is just me as a mark, as a pro wrestling fan. One of my all-time favorite wrestlers, maybe especially of this generation, is Colt Cabana. And as a worker, as a talker, maybe the greatest talker this side of Rowdy Roddy Piper. I'm not kidding. The guy is phenomenal. Listen to his podcast. I know we're talking and we're doing our own thing, but The Art of Wrestling with Colt Cabana, it's phenomenal. You will not be disappointed. It's the best wrestling podcast that there is. Sorry, Bruce Pritchard, but it's Colt Cabana's. But and me as a Colt Cabana fan and a guy who's watched Colt Cabana work for going on 15, 20 years now, I was like, okay, I know that Colt Cabana is a big boy and he can go and he can put a hurting on you if he wants to. And, you know, Lance Archer and the creative with AEW acknowledge that. Now, I hate Lance Archer's finisher move. It's one of the most unbelievable, unrealistic, anybody can slip out of that thing at any time kind of finishers, but Colt Cabana sold it. He made it look good, and that was it. That was fun. I appreciated that Lance Archer gave Colt Cabana his due, gave the right kind of sell job to the impact that Colt Cabana was giving, and those kinds of things. And then the Dustin Rhodes match was – that was one of Dustin's best matches. Oh, man, maybe since, you know, he was working with Mankind back in the WWF, those matches were great. Mick and Dustin as those two characters was solid matches way back then. Dustin, way back when he was working with Booker T, those were great matches. Those are really underrated. Those two guys had a lot of great chemistry. And Dustin is just one of those guys that knows so much about the business. He's just a great teacher. And maybe that's why they had those two guys, you know, maybe Dustin and Lance pair up at that time. Yes, I have softened to Lance Archer. I will admit it. I'm not a fan. I don't like the aesthetic of it. I don't like the fact that he looks like somebody who just went onto a WWE video game and made a pro wrestler. And then like, but whatever. I get what they're trying to do. And those two matches were good, but I don't know if those two matches were good because of Lance Archer or if those two matches were good because of the incredible talent he was in the ring with.
Well, and so, he'll get to show again on the pay-per-view. He gets to work with another great guy, so he'll look good again no matter what when he works with Cody.
I think he loses that match.
I think he'll lose the match, but he'll look good. And which for his stock will be important. I think he loses that match too. I think you need Cody as a champion in this company. And because at least by storyline, he can't compete for the world title for a while. Supposedly forever, but we know forever in wrestling is until you decide to change forever.
They're going to turn Cody heel, and then he's going to pull some stroke on that. I think this is my perfect. If I was perfect Booker in my fantasy Booker, this is what I would do. I would have Cody win the TNT championship. I would have Dustin help him do it. There would be kind of like this, you know, nepotism looking kind of a thing going on there. And then there would be some heat that started to develop between Omega and the Bucks and then Cody and the Rhodes boys once. And a very key component to this is waiting for Cody to get the Rhodes trademark. So call it the Rhodes dynasty, the Rhodes family versus, you know, the Elite or whatever. That to me, I think would be golden booking for AEW. Just endless matches, endless competition, a year's worth of TV right there.
And what I've been predicting for a while, I say predicting, I mean, if I'm writing it, this is how I'm writing it. The whole Kenny Omega, Hangman Page tag team is there to be essentially broken up so they feud with each other. So put Hangman with the Rhodes boys, and you kind of got your 2020 version of Magnum TA.
Oh, sure.
Visual similarities between the two. And so you've got the Rhodes and Magnum TA angle cover.
Absolutely.
Against the Elite. We talked about this on text. Six-man tag matches that could legitimately main event your pay-per-view and sell.
Pay-per-views. Yes, not just TV, pay-per-views.
Yeah.
And then you could use singles matches for 2 or 3 weeks as a build-up to these pay-per-view main events and even put, you know, 3-on-3 for the championships, for the tag team titles, put those in play in that. So it's kind of like a Freebirds rule kind of a thing, or Freebirds rules kind of scenario. To me, that would be – it would be an old school nod back to tag team wrestling in the 80s, Southern wrestling, which was – that's something that, you know, when people talk about Southern wrestling, well, what is Southern wrestling? Well, okay. Tag team wrestling was massive back then, and then – you didn't have very overstated gimmicks. That was another thing about Southern wrestling that was just a thing. Like, you had the rich guy, then you had kind of like the worker man gimmick, and that was about it. And then you had the black guy, and that was like another. That was like, you had like three gimmicks.
Well, you also had a foreign heel.
Okay.
Rusev is on the free agent market in 3 months. Yeah, theoretically, he's available. He could be your foreign heel. So then you got them all covered, right?
Four gimmicks. Okay, fine. We rounded out the southern gimmicks. There we go. But
good. And really, from the perspective of what you're seeing, kind of slowly being built in AEW. You've got a TV championship. That's a Southern wrestling thing. Every Southern promotion had the saddest TV champion. Mid-Atlantic did, Georgia did, Florida did, Mid-South did, Mid-Southern did. So,
and that's Dusty Rhodes. Cheers to him, man. Well, and Kevin Sullivan likes to take credit for that too. Well, that was really a Dusty, you know, invention right there. So,
and you and NWA has it again. You know, we have six-man championships were also a Southern wrestling thing. Think back to the Russians back in the days. They were the tag champs for a while, a couple different times, and the Koloffs, and then Ivan and Khrushchev.
Let me ask you this. That was before my time, the six-man tag. I saw them. I remember seeing them as a very young kid. I remember Sting, Luger. Was it Nikita or one of the anyway,
probably was,
yeah. So there was like a three-man tag championship, and that's all I really kind of remember of it.
Yeah,
what was that like, and how did that work out on a week-to-week basis?
Those were big matches too. The six-man championships were as were defended regularly on TV, as I recall back in the day. It was the Koloffs and Crusher Khrushchev. There was always Dusty and Magnum, and somebody on their side would join in. You would sometimes have a tag team that would then tag with a one person kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So it was great for ad hoc groupings. It was great for your stables to get into. And then they just sort of died out. I think as the Crockett Promotions died out, as Turner, you know, the Turner Company took over the old territories of the Southeast, they kind of just fell away. I think ROH, though, Ring of Honor had a six-man championship. I'm not sure if they still do. But
it was short-lived. Recently. It was short-lived. Yeah, they tried it. I think they were trying to fill out because they had so many stables. Our Ring of Honor, like, they really went stable heavy there for a while, and it kind of worked for a while. They had the Baldies, what they kind of turned into, like an old ECW crew, which was one of, like – so I was thinking about it today and, like, how to – you're going to create a promotion today that would really connect – that would be different than even the AEW WWE model, because that's something maybe smart marks don't want to admit. They're basically the same thing. But so something that if you want it to be different, I would go with the era of Ring of Honor that really played into some of the hardcore stuff, that played with some of the blood and guts CZW type booking every once in a while. But then you would have the insane borderline luchador light heavyweight section of the show, right? And then you would have two or three stalwart talkers and a huge, like these like huge fight main event type. You'd have like find people that looked like MMA fighters, and those were kind of like your cornerstone of your main event scene. And I think it could play very, very well right now if you could pull the money together and the resources and put it on TV. But yeah, so with all the factions that Ring of Honor used to have, it kind of worked, though. It gave everybody kind of something to do. And when you went to a big show and you went to or even go tour town to town, kind of like Ring of Honor used to do, they'd film a show and put it out as like a special edition DVD. Give every town their own name, you know, the Boston Massacre or whatever, and sell that DVD, that kind of a thing. But yeah, the Ring of Honor had so many factions for so long. Sorry.
Well, I just looked this up because it's been a few weeks because New Japan's not putting new stuff out. They've actually taken this time off instead of trying to produce weekly content. But they still do have an active six-man tag champion group. I'm not going to pronounce this right. Los Ingobernables de Japón. Evil Shingo Takagi and Bushi won that at the Wrestle Kingdom, second night of Wrestle Kingdom. I kind of remember Bushi. That.
So, Ibushi. Kota Ibushi?
No, I'm sorry. No, Bushi. Not
oh, okay. 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 Okay.
Yeah. So, but yeah, the LIJ is the current six-man champs in the never overweight six-man champs, openweight six-man champs, I should say. So, so it's still an active title. And of course, New Japan is a very faction-heavy company as well. So that speaks to if you're building factions up, then you have to give something for factions to have. Go for some bragging.
Sure, sure, sure.
The six-man championship is definitely great for that. And, you know, AEW is building up some factions that could actually lead itself in the direction of having a six-man championship down the line.
Possibly. Their roster is pretty small right now. I think they need to focus on building a decent tag team division. That's something that I've been pretty critical of AEW about, and their booking and how they're putting the shows together. I mean, Kenny Omega is – he's carrying two pretty major championships in the business right now. He's carrying AEW Tag Team Championship, but he's also the AAA Mexico Mega Champion, which is their world championship. But, you know, he's having to defend it on TNT TV, which is great. I love that part. But make that part of AEW TV where Kenny Omega is really going and try to bring up some of those AAA guys and have some true AAA championship matches. Make it an international show, you know, try to WCW Cruiserweight. What's the guy that they brought in for the Cruiserweight, the announcer? Anyway, it was this one particular guy, and he rolled over into TNA. He was their guy forever. He was one of their announcers forever. Anyways, but what what the Cruiserweight Championship did for WCW was it allowed them to bring in people that couldn't speak English, and it didn't matter. It was just an interesting style. It was something different. It was a filler. If you want the Cruiserweights to go for 5 minutes, they go for 5 minutes. You want them to go for 45 minutes? All the better. They'll go for 45 minutes. And I think AEW right now could be doing that with the AAA championship that Kenny Omega's carrying around in his duffel bag every week. And then do something else that's more interesting with the tag team belts. There's so many people in AEW right now that are basically kind of sitting there. I think if you put Colt Cabana with somebody and you put him with like a, I don't know, off the top of my head, I'm just thinking, you know, the Mick Foley deal when he went to ECW and he was with Mikey Whipwreck and they were the tag team champions. And you got this nothing like little pipsqueak dude that just kind of lucked into being a world champion. And then you've got this guy that can talk a shriek. So anyway, you could do something like that. I think there's a lot of things else they could be doing with the tag team championships. And I love tag team wrestling. I know that's not necessarily something that gets a lot of attention, but you know, I was talking with some buddies that run a promotion here in Athens. Southern Violence and Wrestling is the name of the promotion. Southern Violence and Wrestling. They will be back on June 6th. That's another crazy thing. So we're hoping and praying that that's going to be Southern Violence and Wrestling once again. But so something I'm trying to like tell these guys, like, look, you know, when I come to your shows, some of my favorite matches are the tag team matches because they're so chaotic. They're so fast. And especially in a smaller venue, tag team matches feel great. And then with AEW, you've got so many young guys on the roster. What are you going to do with them? You don't have a Cruiserweight championship. You can't have them unless you want to create one out of nowhere. Of course, they could do that, but then that's not as cool as a tag team championship. Anyways, man, if that's one thing that AEW could do right now, that would be awesome, and they could revive tag team wrestling in the United States. They could do it right now, and they could do it so easily. I'm not really sure what the thought process is there. I'm not really sure why they created the tag team championships and just they're kind of floundering. But, yeah, that would be one thing I think AEW could and should do better.
Well, as the former Revival, now known as the Revolt.
Which they're being sued over. They're being sued over.
I know as whatever they'll be named when they finally get to AEW. As they make their way towards that company, you can presume that long-awaited feud, at least long-awaited by those of us who cared with the Young Bucks, will hopefully don't do it right away. Make them
work
into it, you know. But there's that we can look forward to, and you know there are good teams there. They just need to put more of it. You know, I'll give them whatever benefit of the doubt they deserve. They have 2 hours a week on TV, and they're in a holding pattern. You can tell. They're trying not to do too much without not doing nothing, as they're waiting for whatever's going to happen in terms of the world slowly opening back up to do so.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they've had the misfortune, if you ask me, of having two major acquisitions from WWE, Matt Hardy and Brody Lee, former Luke Harper, join in when you know that there would have been tremendous crowd pop when those guys debuted, and we don't get crowd pop now out of that. So
absolutely.
And I actually like some of what they're doing. You know, there's a lot of squash matches right now because that's what they have to work with. They tape a lot of shows in Georgia because of the restrictions from a standpoint of being able to do stuff. Now that we're coming out of that era, but they use a lot of enhancement talent from Georgia, giving a lot of those guys opportunity to get over a little bit. I love actually the Kenny Omega last week. Really, I can't remember the name of the guy he worked with, but he gave that guy a lot of opportunity to put himself over in that match, working with the best wrestler in the world. The guy ended up having a 10 or 12 minute match with Omega and was able to get some moves in, get some offense in. We've seen that a lot on the roster So they're doing the best they can. But I think what I read out of AEW is they're sort of saying, let's not give away the good stuff for free. Let's keep you interested, but let's save some stuff for when we get back.
That's very possible. You're absolutely right. I don't know, though, if a tag team championship would deter from the storylines. It could be a situation where you could just do some filler stuff and just, all right, we're going to scrap it for a bit and we're going to put the tag team belts on a couple guys in the inner circle. And then they're going to go and they're going to start just running roughshod on all the baby faces or something like that, or like start picking on those guys. You could fill up your show easily 10 to 15 minutes with, and maybe even 20 minutes if you want to like tag on some promo type stuff with just the tag team division if they wanted to right now. But the AEW tag team belts have just disappeared. It's almost like you forget that Omega and Hangman are champions, and especially in a division in a company that's not very big. That's a little bit, I don't know, man, not exactly what I was hoping for out of those guys, especially with how strong tag team wrestling is for even like the idea of AEW and the people that helped found AEW. Tag team wrestling was bread and butter for these guys.
Yeah.
So
I agree. And I, you know, from what I've read, I guess they taped a lot at once and maybe they just kind of hastily threw it all together. I don't disagree though. I think that they could do a lot more of the tags. This week's show, I'll look at the lineup for it real quick. There is a makeshift tag team match. And this, again, I think indicates sort of the nature of where we are and where they've been with what they were able to record. But you have the Matt Hardy, Kenny Omega versus Jericho and Sammy Guevara match.
Oh, man, this week's card is just awesome.
Yeah, like, Cody versus Joey Janela, John Moxley, mm-hmm. Frankie Kazarian non-title match, Lance Archer, QT Marshall. QT Marshall's an enhancement talent who works really well for an enhancement talent. So that's a show to watch, definitely.
Absolutely. And like you've got you're putting Omega with Matt Hardy, which is brilliant. You're putting your star power onto a tag team match. You're putting Jericho in a match. Has he wrestled since their last pay-per-view on TV? I can't even remember his last match.
I don't think he has. Yeah. He's done some promos and certainly done a play-by-play or the color commentary, but I don't think.
And one of my favorite parts about how they're doing the booking for this week's is they named the tag team of Chris Jericho and Sammy Guevara, Les Sex Gods. Unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah.
So fucking good. Sorry, man.
the prescription for success in AEW when we were live with shows in front of crowds was, how many times can we get away in a night with sending Chris Jericho to the ring? How many times can we play Judas during this 2-hour broadcast? Because if there's ever a slow moment, because I was at the first AEW TV show. It was up in Washington, D.C., about 3 hours up the road from where I am here in Virginia. A buddy of mine and I went up. We wanted to be part of history. And I think Jericho only came out about four times that 2 hours. If the crowd ever seemed to get even slightly quiet, let's play Judas, and here we go. The crowd is live again. So
you don't have to roll them on out there. Just play the song.
Play the song and let Sammy Guevara lead us in doing all the lyrics. And, it's a great prescription. And having those two guys together, back then I didn't realize it. You know, the first match, though, on that TV show was Cody versus Guevara. And they were setting him up great. I mean, they were creating stars. They created Guevara out of nothing.
That match, that first show, and how they were bringing in some of the – I looked around the card when they first were debuting the card. I was like, wow, this is going to be X Division 2.0, maybe a little better. And I was wanting that. I still want that. I love TNA's X Division back when, from like 2003 to about 2010, maybe one of the most interesting and most exciting belts and series in the history of pro wrestling. Look at the names. You got Samoa Joe. You got AJ Styles. Had Jeff Hardy fighting for the thing at one time. You got Chris Sabin, Frankie Kazarian, Chris Daniels, Homicide, Sanjay Dutt. The list goes – Petey Williams. These names, they may not
– Skipper. You forget Elix Skipper because he never did anything after this, but Elix Skipper – one of the most scintillating moves I've ever seen when he did that the Hurricane Rana off the top of the cage.
Oh yeah, he ran the top of the cage and like jumped off.
Yeah, yeah, and did the Hurricane Rana. Unbelievable. Yeah,
it was so unbelievable.
So many guys, so many those what were they called, the X matches where they had the
Ultimate X matches.
Ultimate X matches. Yeah, those were amazing matches. Yeah, for a company that.
Those Ultimate X matches, like, I don't care what you want to talk about, like CZW, you want to talk about like stuff that's just like maybe going too far. Watch an Ultimate X match, they go too far sometimes because you're like, you're gonna die if you like if you the like if you watch like, the hardcore bloody stuff. Like, here's another thing. This is just pulling back the curtain a little bit for people, like with the CZW stuff and the Game Changer Wrestling, and
yeah,
it's very safe. Sorry, guys. It looks bloody. It looks nasty, but it's about the safest kind of wrestling you can do. But when you look at Ultimate X, those guys, like, you've got broken legs. You've got broken necks. Almost every single time somebody was walking away with a sprained wrist, without, you know, people were like, they were like extending their fingers. You ever had that happen to you? No, that would suck very bad. But no, the Ultimate X and the X division at that time, and I think that's one of, like, me and some friends, we were talking about who's the anti Mount Rushmore of pro wrestling, of like, and I came up with like the criteria of like who did the most damage to pro wrestling. And I was like the Click as a whole, Dixie Carter, Jeff Jarrett, and Vince Russo were the guys that I would put on my anti Mount Rushmore for wrestling, just because of how bad Vince Russo, of course, mismanaged WCW. And then he came into TNA, yeah, and Jarrett and Dixie were just so bad with TNA. Yeah. So bad. They had all of it right there. He had Kurt Angle, Sting, AJ Styles, Samoa Joe, LAX, Homicide, Conan, Abyss, all these guys in one building, and an amazing roster. Even the Canadian guys, Bobby Roode, Petey Williams, Eric Young, and their announcer guy, I can't remember him, but he was great. He was like the chubby guy with the Canadian jumpsuit. What was his name?
I can't think of his name now.
But they had all this talent, and it was just like, meh, we're gonna run with Scott Steiner. Cool, good booking.
They did a show over at John Paul Jones Arena in Charlottesville that had all those guys on it.
I was there,
and oh, you were there too.
Mm-hmm. With, well, like 2006.
It was like 1,000 people in the arena. Mm-hmm. I mean, they had this card. They had more wrestlers on the card than they had fans. I had been there that year also for the WWE did a Raw show, an actual money Raw show there.
Yeah, yeah.
The place, of course, was packed, 10,000 people, you know, people hanging off the rafters. And so it was more of the business part. I mean, it wasn't just the business part. You're right. The booking part was done wrong too, but the business people – I reached out to them. I had background in marketing and background in wrestling. Hey, what can I do? I have a website that gets thousands of readers a day. I would love to help you fill that arena up. And they never got back to me. It's like,
of course they're not going to.
I'll go. I'll go watch the show myself. But I could have brought a few hundred people with me if you'd asked me to.
If you asked me to.
They need to get it that it's a business. And so
they were so bad. That's part of why I think Dixie Carter was so bad, because they wanted to be and Jeff Jarrett, they thought that they could do the studio wrestling thing in a different way, make it look bigger, make it look more exciting than NWA stuff. Like, hey, we don't have to pay for this venue. All you got to do is like turn on the lights and turn on the TV cameras and we're golden. And just didn't work out for the guys. And they had, I don't want to re-spit the card, but like all this talent. And you had Sting. You had Sting. In his prime.
Prime still, yeah, yeah, definitely.
And you did – they literally crapped themselves because they didn't know what to do. They just threw just whatever out there.
Yeah.
And anyway, man, that's just – TNA not being competitive with WWE is one of the most embarrassing things in wrestling history.
And a lot of similarities, in some senses at least, to what AEW is doing. They only did the one show a week. You know, they didn't try to make money on house shows. They focused on the TV. So it was not to overtax the wrestlers in terms of what they have to perform and travel.
Right.
WWE does their talents. But it just never resonated. And on the other side, you know, I talked about being at that first AEW TV show in October of last year. My friend and I got up to DC a few hours early. We anticipated correctly that there'd be a tremendous demand on parking in downtown DC. There was, we got there early, we got a parking space.
Sure,
and we're just walking around for 3 or 4 hours. And man, I made the mistake of wearing a Young Bucks t-shirt. Which meant I had to go around for 4 hours doing sweet.
Everybody was just like up on your foot. Yeah.
They were so, everybody for blocks around that place was AEW marks.
Awesome. And,
you know, whereas TNA, I mean, we both went to that show in Charlottesville back in the mid 2000s. And we were four of the 1,000 people there. I mean, you know,
it was pretty unremarkable on the show itself. I mean, I'll tell you what, I remember AJ, it was like AJ, Samoa, Joe, and somebody else, like a 3-way dance or something like that. And that was a great match. It was a fantastic match. And then like the American, who's it? The Outlaws, the tag team.
Yeah.
Chris, James Storm and the other guy.
Storm and Harris. Well, not Harris. I'm sorry.
Chris Harris. So you're right.
It was Chris. They were a great tag team.
Phenomenal tag team. But yeah, that show unto itself was pretty unremarkable. And yeah, you're right. It was just like, I walked right in. I could kind of sit wherever I wanted. And that was it. And
and I remember, if I remember right, they even did something afterwards where they had like a signing in the ring or something like that.
Oh, really? Yeah, I didn't stick around.
I didn't stick around. I stuck around to watch. I mean, to people who went up. Trying to find that card, man. I am trying like crazy to find that card online here real quick, because it was, I mean, there was, and I'm not finding it. I found a sales pitch for it, but I didn't find the card.
Well, like TNA, what's so frustrating about them is that, yes, they had the star power too. It wasn't that they had, especially when Angle came in, like there's no reason they couldn't have done gangbusters business with Angle and Samoa Joe if they had just been touring around the country. Like, or why, or like AJ Styles versus Jeff Hardy, if they had just been going to California a little bit, going to, you know, the Northeast a little bit, play those markets, play Chicago, play the big wrestling traditional markets where, you know, people are going to show up. I mean, there's a few towns in the country where, you know, you put on a wrestling show, you're going to do good business, or you have a really good chance of doing good business. And with their card, if they would have played Seattle, if they would have played Oakland, if they would have played Baltimore, Philly, Chicago, Buffalo, they would have done great.
I found the card. It's actually, this was 2010. This is the one I remember. So 2010, John Paul Jones Arena, February 11, 2010. This report even lists the crowd approximately 600, which is probably more accurate than mine.
Maybe so, yeah.
After the show, fans could take a picture in the ring with AJ Styles for
$20.
Kurt Angle and Tara also signed autographs.
Angle was there. I forgot about him being there.
Angle was there. Yeah, I remember that too. Attendance was hampered by a record snowfall that canceled other events. I don't remember the record snowfall. So,
I don't either.
I don't remember. I don't remember a
snowfall. I mean, maybe I was down towards Lynchburg, and maybe it was like that way, or maybe towards DC that was maybe cutting people off.
I only live 20 miles away in Waynesboro, but I do not travel Afton Mountain in snow. So,
well, sure. I mean, it's straight down, and then you're going to
– yeah. So the card included, let's see, Homicide and Jesse Neal, Jay Lethal in a tag match early in the show. Not much, really. Tara and Angelina Love against Madison Rayne and Lacey Von Erich. I don't really remember that. Jeff Jarrett and Christopher Daniels. I do remember that match. Kurt Angle, James Storm, and Robert Roode. Wow. Defeating, I don't remember any of these guys. Desmond Wolfe, Brutus Magnus, and Doug Williams.
So that was the British contingent that they had.
Okay. And yeah, then the main event was AJ Styles defeating D'Angelo De Niro, the Pope.
The Pope. Okay. I thought it was.
I can kind of see actually maybe one of the 600 people there when I look at that.
Yeah, the card's pretty lackluster.
Yeah.
If they would have just put AJ versus Kurt, I think you would have done something.
Yeah.
I mean, or Samoa Joe versus Kurt, you would have done something.
You had the people in the arena. You just didn't put them in the right places.
Probably so. And maybe they were just like shuffling around. Maybe it's like, well, this is a nothing town. This isn't really doing anything for us. We're just going to try stuff. But no, that's a terrible card. Maybe that's why I had it all shifted around in my head. Maybe I'm like,
yeah,
thinking about a pay-per-view.
we booked it in our heads. Our memories told us what should have been the card.
Yeah.
And then we had to watch what they gave us. That's the unfortunate part of that. Yeah. Well, this has been fun.
Yeah, bro.
You know, we got folks ready a little bit for Money in the Bank. Actually, we skipped that and decided to have some fun talking wrestling.
Because Money in the Bank is boring. The build is boring, and nobody cares about this pay-per-view.
We'll come back next week, and we'll talk about it, but we'll talk about that and then lots of other more interesting things when we get back together next week.
We'll try to, yeah. Thanks, man.
Well, Josh, thank you for your time. For our viewers out there, thank you for your time, and we will talk to you again soon.
Later.